Episode 849, August 19, 2026. Let's get into it. Jury duty note to start. Serator sat through the morning, got sent home. So that's how we're kicking off today's reading. Let's go. We start with some counterintuitive data from VentureBeat about AI context layers in the enterprise. The headline sounds alarming. Enterprises that have built a governed context layer for their AI agents report agent failures at more than twice the rate of enterprises without one. 68% of enterprises have traced a confident but wrong AI answer to missing or inconsistent business context, up from 57% just a month earlier. Among those running or actively building a governed layer, 50% report recurring failures. Among those without one, 21%. Before you conclude that context layers are making things worse, read a little further. The layer isn't causing the failures, it's making them visible. Here's what that means. Without a governed reference point, when an agent confidently gives a wrong answer, nobody traces it back to bad context. It just gets blamed on the model. Oh, AI being AI. With a context layer in place, you have a shared definition of what your business data actually means, what a metric represents, whether a document is current. When an agent gives a wrong answer against that shared model, you can trace exactly where the breakdown happened, which means you can actually fix it. This is the insight buried in the data. The enterprises reporting the most failures are, paradoxically, the ones who have built the instrumentation to catch them. The enterprises reporting zero failures might just not be looking. The article quotes Kyle Nesbitt from Credible Data, describing this as a pain point that predates AI by decades. The lack of governed data analysis, now amplified by AI moving much faster than the governance. There's more in there about how enterprises are actually buying these systems. Access control is now tied with ease of data ingestion as the top selection criteria for a retrieval system at 24% each. Retrieval accuracy trails at 15%. Organizations are buying based on how easy it is to get data in and who's allowed to see it. They're grading success based on whether the answer is right at 38%. Those two things don't line up yet. One in five enterprises are running agents on pure long context loading, just stuffing documents into the model's context window, or no structured context at all. That's not a retrieval strategy, that's hoping the model figures it out. And retrieval itself has a known problem: matching similar text doesn't guarantee matching the right meaning. The example in the article is Rome is closer than Paris versus Paris is closer than Rome. Same words, opposite meanings, embedding retrieval, can't tell them apart. The article closes with a notable finding. 79% of enterprises intend to keep at least part of the context layer outside any single vendor stack. Only 12% plan to consolidate onto one provider's native context layer. Whoever controls runtime context controls the AI decision layer, and enterprises know it. Moving on. Next up is a piece from Debryonig.com on coding harnesses, arguing that harnesses are best understood as situated agents. This is a framing I find useful. Harrison Chase once described agents as four things: a system prompt, a planning tool, a file system, and subagents. That describes the core loop, what the developer controls with the keyboard. The harness manages everything beyond that, the world the developer sits within. The article lists what harnesses are taking on, the session itself as a durable, branchable log you can replay, the environment, the sandbox, terminal, container, the repository with its version history and agents MM. MD files, memory. The developer's preferences accrued over time. Skills, reusable domain knowledge for specific situations. The team, shared traces, project tracking issues. The organization, policies, audits, legal requirements, and the model itself, the LLMs being used and tuned. What I like about this framing is the implication for stickiness. It's trivial to switch from Claude Code to Codex when one model tires you out. But if your entire organization has set up a harness that manages all of those layers, session history, team context, organizational policies, skill repositories, switching gets much harder. The article suggests this might be the network effect that AI labs have been searching for, and notes that companies like Cursor and Copilot are already in this position, wondering what took so long. There's a specific product angle here, too. The article mentions Meta's Muse code, which was co-trained with its harness, similar to how other models have quietly overfit to their harness environment. Omnigent from Databricks is a Meta harness that calls out to Claude Code, Codex, Pi, and others. DeepSeek harness is modular across models, tools, skills, sandboxes, storage, and scheduling. Block-shipped Buzz, which is a Noster social network for agents and humans. Y Combinator's QM gives org-shaped scoping. Each employee, Slack room, and project gets its own memory and sandboxed execution. The point isn't that any of these is right. It's that the common patterns are emerging. And that's useful because it lets us see the meta pattern, harnesses as situated agents. The agent is one piece. The harness is everything around it. From there, let's talk about Go 127. This landed recently, and it's a solid release. Three language changes worth knowing about. First, generic methods are now supported. You can have a single method that works across multiple types rather than writing separate methods for int32, int64, and int. Second, a key in a struct literal can now be any valid field selector, which means you can initialize fields in embedded structs directly without navigating through the parent. Third, function type inference has been generalized. Generic functions can be used without explicit type arguments in composite literals, type conversions, and channel sends. On the toolchain side, Go Doc now supports package version queries, so you can look up documentation for a specific version of a dependency. Go Mod Tidy automatically consolidates multiple require blocks into the standard two-block structure. Performance and runtime, size, specialized memory allocation reduces small object allocation costs by up to 30%, which improves overall performance by about 1% for allocation. Heavy programs. That's a solid win for a language that people use because it doesn't GC pause and allocates fast. On the standard library side, the headline is Encoding JSON V2. This provides high-performance JSON processing with configurable options and stricter defaults. And it's already backing the existing encoding JSON package for faster unmarshalling while maintaining backwards. Compatibility. There's also CryptoMelza implementing the post-quantum MLDSA signature scheme, integrated into CryptoXV1009 and CryptoTLS. Native UUID support. And experimental SIMD support for high-performance numeric code. Finally, we have a piece from AppRite on Cursor Origin. Origin is Cursor's own Git hosting product, positioned as a Git forge for the agentic era. The premise is straightforward. Code is now produced faster than the infrastructure around it was designed to handle, so the forge should be where agents live rather than a system they call into from outside. The review covers what's in early beta today. Repositories, clone, push, pullover, HTTPS, code browsing, and search at cursor.com's codebase. Pull requests with timeline, commits, checks, file diffs, and reviewers. GitHub mirroring that syncs history, branches, tags, and bidirectional PR sync. Third-party app integrations for Vercel, Depo, and BuildKite. And cloud agents that can clone, branch, commit, push, and open PRs on Origin repositories natively. What's explicitly not synced? GitHub issues, actions, and secrets. That last row matters more than it looks. Mirroring covers code and pull requests, not the surrounding project management and automation layer. The reviewer's assessment is nuanced. The core repository and PR workflows work, but there are rough edges, typical of early beta. Rate limits when switching accounts, repository creation flows that leave old modals open. Basic operations that still require the CLI or Git directly rather than the web UI. PR. Discovery and filtering feel less complete than developers are used to from mature platforms. The recommendation is tiered. Try it now if you're an individual or small team already doing most development inside Cursor without years of accumulated GitHub automation. The cost of experimenting is low. The mirror lets you evaluate without moving your source of truth. Mirror. But don't move if you have working GitHub automation. Point. Origin at one repo, use it for browsing and review. Let pushes keep flowing to GitHub. Wait if your workflow depends heavily on GitHub-specific governance. COD, NIRS, merge, queues, issues, or a large integration ecosystem. The article's final take is that the Git hosting itself is not revolutionary yet. Most concepts are familiar, and several parts are less complete than mature platforms. The bet is bigger than rebuilding GitHub inside Cursor. If Cursor can make repositories, agents, automations, and code review work together as one system rather than connected through integrations, Origin could become meaningfully different. For now, treat it as an interesting early beta rather than something to move an established workflow onto. And that wraps episode 849. A couple of themes running through today's articles. One is measurement versus performance. The enterprises measuring failures more carefully look worse on paper. The clean records are often the ones not checking. The other is stickiness. Context layers that nobody can inspect become control points. Harnesses that manage the environment become hard to leave. Git forges that tightly integrate with agents become the path of least resistance. In each case, the real value isn't the individual feature, it's where it sits in the stack, and whether that position creates gravity. Anyway, that's today's reading. See you next time.